Today is Thursday, March 12th, 2025, and you're listening to the World Socialist website. Five years of the COVID-19 pandemic. The Origins of a Social Catastrophe by Evan Blake. 5 years ago, on March 11, 2020, the World Health Organization, the WHO, declared COVID-19 a global pandemic. This marked a critical nodal point in what would become the worst global public health crisis since the 1918-1920 flu pandemic, profoundly impacting the health and lives of the entire world's population and destabilizing social and political life in every country. This somber anniversary has been met with near-universal silence from the political establishment and corporate media of every country. Virtually every column published has minimized the catastrophic character of the pandemic and referred to it in the past tense, despite the fact that COVID-19 continues to disable and kill millions of people globally each year. The cumulative toll of the pandemic is both difficult to quantify and fathom. Excess death estimates indicate that roughly 30 million people have now died globally from acute COVID-19 infection or the myriad adverse health impacts the virus has on the body. Long COVID, first documented by patients in May 2020, now affects over 400 million people globally. Numerous studies have shown that SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, can persist in every organ system and even cross the blood-brain barrier, producing over 200 documented symptoms that are often debilitating. COVID-19 infections have been definitely linked to increased risk of heart attack, stroke, kidney disease, lung damage, immune dysregulation, a wide range of neurological disorders, and more. Multiple scientific studies have shown that the risk of developing long COVID is compounded by each reinfection. Wastewater data, now the only reliable metric to track the spread of the pandemic, shows that the average American has been infected by COVID-19 nearly four times. At the current trajectory, this figure will reach eight infections per person by March 2030, a similar reality undoubtedly exists throughout the world. What caused this disaster, and who bears responsibility? In the most fundamental sense, the capitalist system, based on the division of the world into rival nation-states and the subordination of social needs to private profit, is the source of the socially criminal policies implemented globally in response to the pandemic. The corporate financial oligarchy who runs society decided at the outset that nothing would be done to disrupt the flow of profits and the rise of the stock market. Their aim was to use the pandemic to establish that the principal interest and policy aim of bourgeois governments, under all conditions, is to augment their wealth and increase exploitation. By the time the WHO declared a pandemic, just over 2 months had passed since the scientific community became aware that a dangerous new coronavirus had been detected. From the very beginning, critical time was lost. As was later revealed, the Trump administration and other governments were informed in early February 2020 of the immense dangers posed by COVID-19, but deliberately chose not to coordinate an international response, adopting instead a policy of malign neglect. By mid-February, it had become clear that the U.S. and world were confronting a deadly pathogen, and if rapid action was not taken, its spread would potentially result in the deaths of millions of people worldwide. By the time this was recognized by the population, shortly after the first death in the U.S. took place on February 29, 2020, there was general shock. Hospitals in the initial epicenters of viral transmissions were quickly inundated with patients, with healthcare workers strained to the breaking point, if not infected or killed, due to inadequate or non-existent protections. The overflow of morgues and digging of mass graves were becoming ubiquitous. These horrifying scenes in the US, Italy, and throughout the world dominated public consciousness with the expectation that the government would react and take the necessary measures to prioritize life. But the only country in the world which initially implemented the necessary measures to save lives and protect their population was China. Mounting anger within the Chinese working class in January 2020 forced the government to pioneer the historic zero COVID policy in Hubei province on January 23, 2020, involving lockdowns, mass testing, rigorous contact tracing, and other long-established public health measures. 76 days later, China emerged from lockdowns and resumed relatively normal life, while maintaining vigorous test and trace policies for the following 2.5 years. Before world imperialism pressured the Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, to scrap this life-saving policy, leading to 1 to 2 million deaths. Outside of China, by mid-March 2020, the coronavirus was ripping through workplaces and schools in every metropolitan region of the globe. This prompted auto workers, educators, and other sections of the international working class to force the shutdown of non-essential workplaces and schools in order to save lives. As the stock markets plunged on Wall Street and global financial centers, all efforts by the political establishment were directed towards bailing out the banks. Rather than implementing a systematic program to save lives and counteract the virus, the ruling elite's main priority was saving capitalism and stopping the free fall on Wall Street. On March 22, 2020, the New York Times published an op-ed by their imperial messenger, Thomas Friedman, coining the new mantra for the back-to-work campaign, quote, "The cure cannot be worse than the disease." This campaign gained steam the following week after the passage of the CARES Act, which initiated the funneling of trillions of dollars to the rich, while thousands of workers and retirees were soon dying every day. The entire official narrative shifted from supposedly saving lives towards the rapid reopening of the economy. This coincided with the widespread promotion of the herd immunity policy of deliberate mass infection pioneered in Sweden. This pseudo-scientific policy was based on the fraudulent claim that people, once infected with COVID-19, would be forever immune to the disease. Aside from its inhumane character, this made totally false assumptions about the virus, while ignoring the historical data on the wide-ranging consequence of infection with coronaviruses, as documented after the 2002-2004 SARS-CoV-1 outbreak. Warmed over eugenicist and fascistic conceptions were put forward, with a modern-day survival of the fittest pathos permeating every speech and policy of Donald Trump, Boris Johnson, Jair Bolsonaro, and their co-thinkers internationally. The modern promotion of Malthusianism acquired the character of a celebration of death. In the US, the election of Joe Biden brought no fundamental change. Despite pledges to follow the science, Biden perpetuated the subordination of public health to the demands of Wall Street. The rollout of life-saving vaccines, which were a truly massive achievement of modern science, was subordinated to private profit and vaccine nationalism. To this day, the vast majority of people in low-income countries have never received 2 doses of anti-COVID vaccines, including 68% of Africans. After initially pursuing a vaccine-only strategy and actively discouraging masking and other public health measures in November 2021, the Biden administration greeted the emergence of the highly infectious and vaccine-resistant Omicron variant with undisguised glee. Over the subsequent period, they steadily dismantled the entire pandemic surveillance system, and by the following summer, White House explicitly adopted the forever COVID policy of unending mass infection, death, and debilitation. The bipartisan assault on science in response to the COVID-19 pandemic has crippled the field of public health, setting the stage for the next pandemic. Over the past year, the Biden administration did nothing to stop the spread of the H5N1 bird flu among dairy cattle, despite the fact that the bird flu historically has a 50% fatality rate among humans. Biden's disastrous policies, including the normalization of mass death and debilitation from COVID-19, created the conditions for the return of Trump to the White House and the confirmation of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to head the 13 agencies of the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. Kennedy, the most notorious purveyor of anti-vaccine disinformation in the world, is already casting doubt on vaccines in response to the growing measles outbreak in Texas and the Southwest, which has killed 2 people so far. Last week, the Senate held confirmation hearings for Jay Bhattacharya, Trump's pick to head the National Institutes of Health, the NIH. Well known as a co-author of the Great Barrington Declaration, the Herd Immunity Manifesto, Bhattacharya was not questioned by a single Democrat about his criminal role during the pandemic. The initial weeks of the second Trump administration have been marked by a series of alarming actions, including the withdrawal of the U.S. from the WHO, undermining global efforts to track and respond to pandemics. An unprecedented gag order has been imposed on all 13 agencies within the HHS, suppressing vital public health information, and the firing of over 5,000 employees at the HHS, CDC, NIH, and FDA, targeting scientists and public health professionals. A central aim of the Trump administration is to destroy Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, programs upon which tens of millions of Americans rely upon for their survival. This is the logical extension of the bipartisan pandemic policies aimed at culling the elderly and lowering life expectancy, which a recent study estimates has saved $156 billion in social spending. The pandemic revealed that the position of substantial sections of the ruling elite was that more people should have died. From that faction represented in the U.S. by Trump, the Republicans, and their backers like fascist billionaire Elon Musk, the measures taken to save lives were seen as a missed opportunity to cull the elderly and slash expenditures on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Throughout the pandemic, the World Socialist website has waged a relentless struggle for scientific truth. We have exposed the lies of governments and the media, defended principled scientists against attacks, and championed a scientific policy of global elimination, the only viable strategy towards the pandemic. The Global Workers' Inquest into the COVID-19 pandemic, initiated by the WSWS, stands as a testament to our commitment to uncovering the truth and holding those responsible accountable. The pandemic is by no means over. New variants continue to emerge, and the threat of new pathogens like bird flu looms large. This winter, the convergence of COVID-19 with other respiratory illnesses has once again overwhelmed healthcare systems, with over 20,000 Americans dying of seasonal flu. In this context, the WSWS reiterates the following demands: for an immediate end to the forever COVID policy and the implementation of science-based public health measures. This includes universal masking, comprehensive testing and contact tracing, improved ventilation in all public spaces, and financial support for those affected by the pandemic. For a massive investment in research and development of next-generation vaccines and treatments, this must be coupled with a global effort to ensure universal access to these life-saving tools. For a fundamental reorganization of society based on socialist principles, This is the only way to ensure that public health is prioritized over private profit and the needs of all people are met. The COVID-19 pandemic has laid bare the incapacity of capitalism to deal with the problems of mass society, and that this social system is in an advanced state of regression. The working class must draw the necessary conclusions and take up the fight for a socialist future. This is the only path to ending the pandemic and building a world free from exploitation, oppression, and preventable deaths. As House votes to avoid government shutdown, Trump's Department of Education to cut half its workforce, by Kevin Reed. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill on Tuesday to fund the government through September 30th, while the White House took steps to slash nearly half of the Department of Education's workforce in preparation for its outright elimination. The House vote to avoid a government shutdown was 217 to 213, with one Republican, Representative Thomas Massie of Kentucky, voting against the bill, along with all but one Democrat. In a late-night post on his Truth Social platform, Trump attacked Representative Massie for his opposition to the bill, saying he, quote, should be primaried in the next election cycle. The passage of the bill was in part the result of the entire intervention of both the President and Vice President J.D. Vance among House Republicans on Monday and Tuesday morning. In a private meeting on Tuesday morning, Vance reportedly told Republican representatives that they would be blamed for a government shutdown, saying, quote, we already lost one vote. We can't lose another, referring to Massie. According to unnamed sources, Vance told House Republicans they needed to pass the stopgap funding measure to lay the basis for a domestic policy bill now in preparation. The temporary funding bill, known as a continuing resolution, would maintain spending at levels approved last year, plus increase military funding by $6 billion, while decreasing non-military spending by $13 billion. The cuts would come from eliminating any special projects in lawmakers' districts or states and a forced reduction of more than $1 billion from the District of Columbia's budget for the rest of the fiscal year. Most significant, however, are provisions in the bill that grant the Trump administration broad authority over the next 6 months to accelerate the dismantling and defunding of major government departments through Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. This aspect of the resolution, which feeds into Trump's fascist assault on the constitutional separation of powers, was more than enough for sycophantic Republicans, including the House Freedom Caucus, to bury their supposed opposition to stopgap funding measures that failed to address the massive U.S. government deficits. Among the provisions in the bill, for example, is one that allows the Trump administration to steer money away from combating fentanyl and use it on the mass deportation of immigrants. Before the vote, House Speaker Mike Johnson said, this clean CR contains no poison pill riders, no policy riders there at all, no cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, or Social Security, zero, no cuts to veteran benefits, zero. End quote. In reality, the bill legitimizes Musk's DOGE, taking a hatchet to the staff and operations of these programs without congressional authorization. House Democrats voted against the continuing resolution, claiming Republicans abandoned a bipartisan deal in progress. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries called it a partisan reckless spending bill and criticized the White House for failing to consult with Democrats. While they objected to provisions expanding Trump's executive authority over the final 6 months of the budget, they did little to prevent the consolidation of authoritarian rule in the White House. A government shutdown at midnight on Friday, technically 12:01 a.m. Saturday morning, is still a possibility, since the Senate must also pass a continuing resolution. In the Senate, Republicans need the support of at least 8 Democrats to get the bill to Trump's desk before the deadline. A minimum of 60 votes is required to push the measure through procedural obstacles in the Senate that can derail it from being passed in time to avoid a government shutdown. As of this writing, Democratic Party Senate Minority Leader Charles Schumer of New York has not issued a statement on the looming vote. News reports said that the Senate Democrats were currently deliberating over their positions on the bill and the possibility of a shutdown. On Tuesday, the Department of Education, ED, began a reduction in force, or RIF, that will slash nearly 50% of its workforce. Through a combination of resignations, buyouts, and terminations, the department's staff will be cut from 4,133 to 2,183, eliminating 1,950 federal jobs. In a press release, Trump's Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, said, "Today's reduction in force reflects the Department of Education's commitment to efficiency, accountability, and ensuring that resources are directed where they matter most, to students, parents, and teachers." End quote. The resources that McMahon is speaking about are to be removed from public education and handed over to private, for-profit schools. The press release stated that employees facing termination will be placed on administrative leave starting March 21st. It also noted that some staff had accepted voluntary resignations or retirements over the past 7 weeks. The remaining 1,378 workers will remain on administrative leave with pay until June 9th, after which they will be officially unemployed. The press statement also absurdly claimed that the department will, quote, "continue to deliver on all statutory programs that fall under the agency's purview, including formula funding, student loans, Pell grants, funding for special needs students, and competitive grant making." End quote. The ED announcement came shortly after department employees were told that their offices, including those in the National Capital Region and other regional locations, would be closed for the day on Wednesday. An email sent to staff and obtained by ABC News cited security reasons for the fact that the department buildings would be inaccessible starting at 6 p.m. The email said, quote, "You must vacate the building by that time. All ED offices in the NCR and the regions will be closed to employees and contractor employees on Wednesday, March 12th. End quote. Department officials later said the safety precautions were meant to protect remaining employees who will retain their positions with the ED. The email said, quote, "Please take your laptop with you when you depart on Tuesday. Employees will not be permitted in any ED facility on Wednesday, March 12th for any reason. All offices will reopen on Thursday, March 13th, at which time in-person presence will resume." ABC News interviewed one ED employee who said, "People are petrified to do their jobs. People are worried about, like, if I push back on something that somebody wants to do, right? And I say, that's not really what the law says or is legal. Am I going to get a bad performance? And now they use a bad performance to kick me out?" As explained by the WSWS on Saturday, the Trump administration and Education Secretary McMahon are not only eliminating the Department of Education, but dismantling the public education system in the U.S. A major component of this plan was articulated in Trump's January 29th executive order, expanding educational freedom and opportunity for families, which would divert $5 to $10 billion in public funds to a private, parochial, and homeschooling voucher system. In a Board of Education meeting on Tuesday evening, Detroit Public Schools Community District Superintendent Nikolai Vitti laid out the catastrophic impact of the federal budget cuts that that are coming to public schools across the country. Vitti said that the assumption is that there will be a 25% reduction across the board of all K-12 federal budgets and revenue streams. Vitti said, quote, "So internally right now, we've started to look at, you know, from a line item point of view, obviously, what are we funding in? Title I, Title II, Title III, Title IV, and what those cuts may mean. I don't believe right now we're looking at things like closing schools, but there will be scenarios with maybe accelerating the phase out of schools, closures, looking at small high schools, and possibly looking at layoffs." End quote. The attack on the Department of Education is just one component of the Trump administration's sweeping assault on social programs and democratic rights. From gutting Medicaid, Social Security, and public education, to mass deportations and draconian budget cuts, the administration is systematically dismantling the basic infrastructure that tens of millions rely on. Also today on the World Socialist website, report to Wayne State meeting. It is happening here. Trump's attack on immigrants and the threat of dictatorship. This report was delivered to a meeting of the International Youth and Students for Social Equality, the IYSSC, at Wayne State University in Detroit on March 6, 2025, by Eric London. RFK Jr.'s CDC plans to resurrect the unfounded link between vaccines and autism. The CDC's decision to reinvestigate links between vaccines and autism after decades of scientific inquiry that showed no such connection is a bellwether moment in the anti-public health trajectory of Trump's fascistic policies, by Benjamin Mateus. Mired in crypto scandal, Javier Milei escalates war on Argentina's working class. The approval of an IMF package and the appointment of the two judges by executive decree, both clear authoritarian power grabs, took place amid accusations of corruption against Milei in connection with the crypto crisis, by Rafael Azul. Former Philippine President Duterte arrested for crimes against humanity. The arrest and extradition of Duterte expresses the intensity of the ongoing political warfare among the Philippine elite over the country's geopolitical orientation, by John Malvar. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.